Chapter 49. On leaving Caesar, Petronius had himself borne to his house on the Carum, which, being surrounded on three sides by a garden, and having in front the small Caesian Forum, escaped the fire luckily. For this cause other Augustans, who had lost their houses, and in them vast wealth and many works of art, called Petronius fortunate. For years it had been repeated that he was the firstborn of fortune, and Caesar's growing friendship in recent times seemed to confirm the correctness of this statement. But that firstborn of fortune might meditate now on the fickleness of his mother, or rather on her likeness to Cronos, who devoured his own children. Were my house burnt, said he to himself, and with it my gems, Etruscan vases, Alexandrian glass, and Corinthian bronze, Nero might indeed have forgotten the offense. By Pollux! And to think that it depended on me alone to be Praetorian prefect at this moment. I should proclaim to Gelinus the incendiary, which he is really. I should array him in the painful tunic, apostrophe, and deliver him to the populace. Protect the Christians, rebuild Rome. Who knows even if a better epoch would not begin thus for honest people? I ought to have taken the office, simply out of regard for Vicius. In case of overwork I could have surrendered command to Bini, and Nero would not have even tried to resist. Then let Vinicius baptize all the Praetorians, nay, Caesar himself. What harm could that be to me? Nero pious, Nero virtuous and merciful, this would be even an amusing spectacle. And his carelessness was so great, that he began to laugh. But after a time his thoughts turned in another direction. It seemed to him, that he was in Antium, that Paul of Tarsus was saying to him, Ye call us enemies of life, but answer me, Petronius. If Caesar were a Christian, and acted according to our religion, would not life be safer and more certain? And remembering these words, he continued, colon by Castor. No matter how many Christians they murder here, Paul will find as many new ones. For he is right, unless the world can rest on scoundrelism. But who knows, that this will not be the case soon. I myself, who have learned not a little, did not learn how to be a great enough scoundrel. Hence I shall have to open my veins. But in every case it must have ended thus, and if not thus, in some other way. I am sorry for Eunice and my myrrh vase, but Eunice is free, and the vase will go with me. Ahenobarbus will not get it, in any event. I am sorry also for Vinicius. But, though I was bored less of late than before, I am ready. In the world things are beautiful, but people are so vile for the greater part, that life is not worth a regret. He who knew how to live, should know how to die. Though I belong to the Augustans, I was freer than they supposed. Here he shrugged his shoulders. They may think that my knees are trembling at this moment, and that terror has raised the hair on my head. But on reaching home, I will take a bath in violet water, my golden-haired herself will anoint me. Then after refreshment we will have sung to us that hymn to Apollo composed by Anthemios. I said once to myself that it was not worth while to think of death, for death thinks of us without our assistance. It would be a wonder if there are really Elysian fields, and in them shades of people. Eunice would come in time to me, and we should wander together over asphodel meadows. I should find, too, society better than this. What buffoons, tricksters, a vile herd without taste or polish. Tens of arbiters elegantiarum could not transform those Trimalchians into decent people. By Persephone, I have had enough. And he noted with astonishment that something separated him from those people already. He had known them well earlier, and had known what to think of them. Still they seemed to him now as farther away, and more deserving of contempt than usual. Indeed, he had had enough of them. But afterward he began to think over his position. Thanks to his acuteness, he knew that destruction was not threatening him directly. Nero had seized an appropriate occasion to utter a few select, lofty phrases about friendship and forgiveness, thus binding himself for the moment. He will have to seek pretexts, and before he finds them much time may pass. First of all, he will celebrate the games with Christians, said Petronius to himself. Only then will he think of me, and if that be true, it is not worth while to take trouble or change my course of life. Near danger threatens Vinicius. And thenceforth he thought only of Vinicius, whom he resolved to rescue. Four sturdy Bithynians bore his litter quickly through ruins, ash heaps, and stones with which the carum was filled yet, but he commanded them to run swiftly so as to be home at the earliest. Vinicius, whose consula had been burned, was living with him, and was at home, fortunately. Hast seen Lygia today? Were the first words of Petronius. I have just come from her. Hear what I tell thee, and lose no time in questions. It has been decided this morning at Caesar's to lay the blame of burning Rome on the Christians. Persecutions and tortures threaten them. Pursuit may begin any instant. Take Lygia and flee at once beyond the Alps even, or to Africa. And hasten, for the Palatine is nearer the Trans-Tiber than is this place. Vinicius was, indeed, too much of a soldier to lose time in useless queries. He listened with frowning brows, and a face intent and terrible, but fearless. Evidently the first feeling of his nature in presence of peril was a wish to defend and give battle. I go, said he. One word more. Take a purse of gold, take weapons, and a handful of thy Christians. In case of need, rescue her. Vinicius was in the door of the atrium already. Send me news by a slave, cried Petronius. When left alone, he began to walk by the columns which adorned the atrium, thinking of what had happened. He knew that Lygia and Linus had returned after the fire to the former house, which, like the greater part of the Trans-Tiber, had been saved, and that was an unfavorable circumstance, for otherwise it would have been difficult to find them among throngs of people. Petronius hoped, however, that as things were, no one in the Palatine knew where they lived, and therefore in every case Vinicius would anticipate the Praetorians. It occurred to him also that Tigellinus, wishing to seize at one attempt as many Christians as possible, would extend his net over all Rome. If they send no more than 10 people after her, thought he, that giant legion will break their bones, and what will it be if Vinicius comes with assistance? Thinking of this he was consoled. True, armed resistance to the Praetorians was almost the same as war with Caesar. Petronius knew also that, if Vinicius hid from the vengeance of Nero, that vengeance might fall on himself, but he cared little. On the contrary, he rejoiced at the thought of crossing Nero's plans and those of Tigellinus, and determined to spare in the matter neither men nor money. Since in Antium Paul of Tarsus had converted most of his slaves, he, while defending Christians, might count on their zeal and devotion. The entrance of Eunice interrupted his thoughts. At sight of her all his cares and troubles vanished without a trace. He forgot Caesar, the disfavor into which he had fallen, the degraded Augustians, the persecution threatening the Christians, Vinicius, Lygia, and looked only at her with the eyes of an anthetic man enamored of marvelous forms, and of a lover for whom love breathes from those forms. She, in a transparent violet robe called O Avestis, through which her maiden-like form appeared, was really as beautiful as a goddess. Feeling herself admired meanwhile, and loving him with all her soul, ever eager for his fondling, she blushed with delight, as if as he had been an innocent maiden. What wilt thou say to me, Charis? Asked Petronius, stretching his hands to her. She, inclining her golden head to him, answered, Nthemios has come with his choristers, and asks if 'tis thy wish to hear him. Let him stay. He will sing to us during dinner the hymn to Apollo, by the groves of Paphos. When I see thee in that cone gauze, I think that Aphrodite has veiled herself with a piece of the sky, and is standing before me. O Lord! Come hither, Eunice, embrace me with thy arms, and give thy lips to me. Dost thou love me? I should not have loved Zeus more. Then she pressed her lips to his, while quivering in his arms from happiness. After a while Petronius asked, But if we should have to separate? Eunice looked at him with fear in her eyes. How is that, Lord? Fear not, I ask, for who knows, but I may have to set out on a long journey? Take me with thee. Petronius changed the conversation quickly, and said, Tell me, are there asphodels on the grass plot in the garden? The cypresses and the grass plots are yellow from the fire, the leaves have fallen from the myrtles, and the whole garden seems dead. All Rome seems dead, and soon it will be a real graveyard. Dost thou know that an edict against the Christians is to be issued, and a persecution will begin during which thousands will perish? Why punish the Christians, Lord? They are good and peaceful. For that very reason, let us go to the sea. Thy beautiful eyes do not like to see blood. Well, but meanwhile I must bathe. Come to the Ilzothisone to anoint my arms. By the girdle of Cyprus, never hast thou seemed to me so beautiful. I will give command to make a bath for thee in the form of a shell. Thou wilt be like a costly pearl in it. Come, golden-haired. He went out, and an hour later both, in garlands of roses, and with misty eyes, were resting before a table covered with a service of gold. They were served by boys dressed as cupids, they drank wine from ivy-wreathed goblets, and heard the hymn to Apollo sung to the sound of harps, under direction of Anthemios. What cared they, if around the villa chimneys pointed up from the ruins of houses, and gusts of wind swept the ashes of burnt Rome in every direction? They were happy thinking only of love, which had made their lives like a divine dream. But before the hymn was finished, a slave, the chief of the atrium, entered the hail. Lord, said he, in a voice quivering with alarm, a centurion with a detachment of praetorians is standing before the gate, and, at command of Caesar, wishes to see thee. The song and the sound of lutes ceased. Alarm was roused in all present, for Caesar, in communications with friends, did not employ praetorians usually, and their arrival at such times foreboded no good. Petronius alone showed not the slightest emotion, but said, like a man annoyed by continual visits, they might let me dine in peace. Then turning to the chief of the atrium, he said, let him enter. The slave disappeared behind the curtain. A moment later heavy steps were heard, and an acquaintance of Petronius appeared, the centurion Aper, armed, and with an iron helmet on his head. Noble lord, said he, here is a letter from Caesar. Petronius extended his white hand lazily, took the tablet, and, casting his eye over it, gave it, in all calmness, to Eunice. He will read a new book of the Troyad this evening, and invites me to come. I have only the order to deliver the letter, said the centurion. Yes, there will be no answer. But, centurion, thou mightst rest a while with us, and empty a goblet of wine? Thanks to thee, noble lord. A goblet of wine I will drink to thy health willingly, but rest I may not, for I am on duty. Why was the letter given to thee, and not sent by a slave? I know not, lord. Perhaps because I was sent in this direction on other duty. I know, against the Christians? Yes, lord. Is it long since the pursuit was begun? Some divisions were sent to the Trans-Tiber before midday. When he had said this, the centurion shook a little wine from the goblet in honor of Mars. Then he emptied it, and said, May the gods grant thee, lord, what thou desirest. Take the goblet too, said Petronius. Then he gave a sign to Anthemios, to finish the hymn to Apollo. Bronzebeard is beginning to play with me and Vinicius, thought he, when the harps sounded anew. I divined his plan. He wanted to terrify me, by sending the invitation through a centurion. They will ask the centurion in the evening how I received him. No, no. Thou wilt not amuse thyself overmuch, cruel and wicked prophet. I know that thou wilt not forget the offense. I know that my destruction will not fail. But if thou think that I shall look into thy eyes imploringly, that thou wilt see fear and humility on my face, thou art mistaken. Caesar writes, Lord, said Eunice, Come if thou hast the wish. Wilt thou go? I am in excellent health, and can listen even to his verses, answered Petronius. Hence I shall go, all the more since Vinicius cannot go. In fact, after the dinner was finished, and after the usual walk, he gave himself into the hands of hairdressers, and of slaves who arranged his robes, and an hour later, beautiful as a god, he gave command to take him to the Palatine. It was late, the evening was warm and calm, the moon shone so brightly that the lampadarii going before the litter put out their torches. On the streets, and among the ruins, crowds of people were pushing along, drunk with wine, in garlands of ivy and honeysuckle, bearing in their hands branches of myrtle and laurel taken from Caesar's gardens. Abundance of grain and hopes of great games filled the hearts of all with gladness. Here and there songs were sung magnifying the Ivan night and love. Here and there they were dancing by the light of the moon, and the slaves were forced repeatedly to demand space for the litter of the noble Petronius, and then the crowd pushed apart, shouting in honor of their favorite. He was thinking of Vinicius, and wondering why he had no news from him. He was an Epicurean and an egotist, but passing time, now with Paul of Tarsus, now with Vinicius, hearing daily of the Christians, he had changed somewhat without his own knowledge. A certain breeze from them had blown on him. This cast new seeds into his soul. Besides his own person, others began to occupy him. Moreover, he had been always attached to Vinicius, for in childhood he had loved greatly his sister, the mother of Vinicius. At present, therefore, when he had taken part in his affairs, he looked on them with that interest with which he would have looked on some tragedy. Petronius did not lose hope that Vinicius had anticipated the Praetorians and fled with Lygia, or, in the worst case, had rescued her. But he would have preferred to be certain, since he foresaw that he might have to answer various questions for which he would better be prepared. Stopping before the house of Tiberius, he alighted from the litter, and after a while entered the atrium, filled already with Augustians. Yesterday's friends, though astonished that he was invited, still pushed back, but he moved on among them, beautiful, free, unconcerned, as self-confident, as if he himself had the power to distribute favors. Some, seeing him thus, were alarmed in spirit lest they had shown him indifference too early. Caesar, however, feigned not to see him, and did not return his obeisance, pretending to be occupied in conversation. But Tigellinus approached and said, "Good evening, Arbiter Legantiarum. Dost thou assert still that it was not the Christians who burnt Rome?" Petronius shrugged his shoulders, and, clapping Tigellinus on the back as he would a freedman, answered, "Thou knowest as well as I what to think of that. I do not dare to rival thee in wisdom. And thou art right, for when Caesar reads to us a new book from the Troad, thou, instead of crying out like a jackdaw, wouldst have to give an opinion that was not pointless." Tigellinus bit his lips. He was not overrejoiced that Caesar had decided to read a new book, for that opened a field in which he could not rival Petronius. In fact, during the reading, Nero, from habit, turned his eyes involuntarily toward Petronius, looking carefully to see what he could read in his face. The latter listened, raised his brows, agreed at times, in places increased his attention, as if to be sure that he heard correctly. Then he praised or criticized, demanded corrections or the smoothing of certain verses. Nero himself felt that for others in their exaggerated praises it was simply a question of themselves, that Petronius alone was occupied with poetry for its own sake, that he alone understood it, and that if he praised one could be sure that the verses deserved praise. Gradually therefore he began to discuss with him, to dispute, and when at last Petronius brought the fitness of a certain expression into doubt, he said, "Thou wilt see in the last book why I used it." "Ah," thought Petronius, "then we shall wait for the last book." More than one hearing this said in spirit, "Colon woe to me. Petronius with time before him may return to favor and overturn even Tigellinus." and they began again to approach him. But the end of the evening was less fortunate. For Caesar, at the moment when Petronius was taking leave, inquired suddenly, with blinking eyes and a face at once glad and malicious, "But why did not Vinicius come?" Had Petronius been sure that Vinicius and Lydia were beyond the gates of the city, he would have answered, "With thy permission he has married and gone." But seeing Nero's strange smile, he answered, "Thy invitation, divinity, did not find him at home." "Say to Vinicius, that I shall be glad to see him," answered Nero, "and tell him from me, not to neglect the games in which Christians will appear." These words alarmed Petronius. It seemed to him that they related to Lydia directly. Sitting in his litter, he gave command to bear him home still more quickly than in the morning. That, however, was not easy. Before the house of Tiberius stood a crowd dense and noisy, drunk as before, though not singing and dancing, but, as it were, excited. From afar came certain shouts which Petronius could not understand at once, but which rose and grew till at last they were one savage roar. "To the lions with Christians!" Rich litters of courtiers pushed through the howling rabble. From the depth of burnt streets new crowds rushed forth continually. These, hearing the cry, repeated it. News passed from mouth to mouth that the pursuit had continued from the forenoon, that a multitude of incendiaries were seized, and immediately along the newly cleared and the old streets, through alleys lying among ruins around the Palatine, over all the hills and gardens were heard through the length and breadth of Rome shouts of swelling rage, "To the lions with Christians!" "Heard!" repeated Petronius, with contempt, "a people worthy of Caesar!" And he began to think that a society resting on superior force, on cruelty of which even barbarians had no conception, on crimes and mad profligacy, could not endure. Rome ruled the world, but was also its ulcer. The odor of a corpse was rising from it. Over its decaying life the shadow of death was descending. More than once this had been mentioned even among the Augustans, but never before had Petronius had a clearer view of this truth, that the laurel chariot on which Rome stood in the form of a triumphator, and which dragged behind a chained herd of nations, was going to the precipice. The life of that world-ruling city seemed to him a kind of mad dance, an orgy, which must end. He saw then that the Christians alone had a new basis of life, but he judged that soon there would not remain a trace of the Christians. And what then? The mad dance would continue under Nicolino, and if Nero disappeared, another would be found of the same kind or worse, for with such a people and such patricians there was no reason to find a better leader. There would be a new orgy, and moreover a fouler and a viler one. But the orgy could not last forever, and there would be need of sleep when it was over, even because of simple exhaustion. While thinking of this, Petronius felt immensely wearied. Was it worthwhile to live, and live in uncertainty, with no purpose, but to look at such a society? The genius of death was not less beautiful than the genius of sleep, and he also had wings at his shoulders. The litter stopped before the arbiter's door, which was opened that instant by the watchful keeper. "Has the noble Vinicius returned?" inquired Petronius. "Yes, Lord, a moment ago," replied the slave. "He has not rescued her," thought Petronius. And casting aside his toga, he ran into the atrium. Vinicius was sitting on a stool, his head bent almost to his knees with his hands on his head. But at the sound of steps he raised his stony face, in which the eyes alone had a feverish brightness. "Thou wert late?" asked Petronius. "Yes, they seized her before midday." A moment of silence followed. "Hast thou seen her?" "Yes." "Where is she?" "In the Mamertine prison." Petronius trembled and looked at Vinicius with an inquiring glance. The latter understood. "No," said he. "She was not thrust down to the Tullianum 1, nor even to the middle prison. I paid the guard to give her his own room. Ursus took his place at the threshold, and is guarding her." "Why did Ursus not defend her?" They sent 50 praetorians, and Linus forbade him. But Linus? Linus is dying, therefore they did not seize him. What is thy intention?
To save her, or die with her.
I too believe in Christ.
Theseus spoke with apparent calmness, but there was such despair in his voice, that the heart of Petronius quivered from pure pity.
I understand thee, said he, but how dost thou think to save her?
I paid the guards highly, first to shield her from indignity, and second not to hinder her flight.
When can that happen?
They answered that they could give her to me at once, as they feared responsibility.
When the prison will be filled with a multitude of people, and when the tally of prisoners is confused, they will deliver her.
But that is a desperate thing.
Do thou save her, and me first.
Thou art a friend of Caesar.
He himself gave her to me.
Go to him and save me.
Petronius, instead of answering, called a slave, and, commanding him to bring two dark mantles and two swords, turned to Vinicius.
On the way I will tell thee, said he.
M. Meanwhile take the mantle and weapon, and we will go to the prison.
There give the guards 100,000 sestertia.
Give them twice, and five times more, if they will free Lydia at once.
Otherwise it will be too late.
Let us go, said Vinicius.
After a while both were on the street.
Now listen to me, said Petronius.
I did not wish to lose time.
I am in disfavor, beginning with today.
My own life is hanging on the hair, hence I can do nothing with Caesar.
Worse than that, I am sure that he would act in opposition to my request.
If that were not the case, would I advise thee to flee with Lydia, or to rescue her?
Besides, if thou escape, Caesar's wrath will turn on me.
Today he would rather do something at thy request than at mine.
Do not count on that, however. Get her out of the prison, and flee.
Nothing else is left.
If that does not succeed, there will be time for other methods.
Meanwhile know that Lydia is in prison, not alone for belief in Christ.
Poppaea's anger is pursuing her and thee.
Thou hast offended the Augusta by rejecting her, dost remember?
She knows that she was rejected for Lydia, whom she hated from the first cast of the eye.
Nay, she tried to destroy Lydia before by ascribing the death of her own infant to her witchcraft.
The hand of Poppaea is in this.
How explain that Lydia was the first to be imprisoned?
Who could point out the house of Linus?
But I tell thee that as he has been followed this long time.
I know that I wring thy soul, and take the remnant of thy hope from thee, but I tell thee this purposely, for the reason, that if thou free her, not before they come at the idea, that thou wilt try, ye are both lost.
Yes, I understand,
muttered Vinicius.
The streets were empty, because of the late hour.
Their further conversation was interrupted, however, by a drunken gladiator who came toward them.
He reeled against Petronius, put one hand on his shoulder, covering his face with a breath filled with wine, and shouted in a hoarse voice, "To the lions with Christians!"
"Myrmillon," answered Petronius, "quietly, listen to good counsel, go thy way."
With his other hand the drunken man seized him by the arm, "Shout with me, or I'll break thy neck."
"Christians to the lions!"
But the arbiter's nerves had had enough of those shouts.
From the time that he had left the Palatine they had been stifling him like a nightmare, and rending his ears. So when he saw the fist of the giant above him, the measure of his patience was exceeded.
"Friend," said he, "thou hint the smell of wine, and art stopping my way."
Thus speaking, he drove into the man's breast to the hilt the short sword which he had brought from home.
Then, taking the arm of Vinicius, he continued as if nothing had happened,
"Caesar said today, tell Vinicius from me to be at the games in which Christians will appear."
Dost understand what that means?
They wish to make a spectacle of thy pain.
That is a settled affair.
Perhaps that is why thou and I are not imprisoned yet.
If thou art not able to get her at once, I do not know act might take thy part.
But can she effect anything?
Thy Sicilian lands, too, might tempt to Gelinus.
Make the trial.
I will give him all that I have, answered Vinicius. from the Carinae to the Forum was not very far, hence they arrived soon. The night had begun to pale, and the walls of the castle came out definitely from the shadow. Suddenly, as they turned toward the Mamertan prison, Petronius stopped and said, "Praetorians! Too late!" In fact, the prison was surrounded by a double rank of soldiers. The morning dawn was silver in their helmets and the points of their javelins. Vinicius grew as pale as marble. "Let us go on," said he. After a while they halted before the line. Gifted with an uncommon memory, Petronius knew not only the officers, but nearly all the Praetorian soldiers. Soon he saw an acquaintance, a leader of a cohort, and nodded to him. "But what is this, Niger?" asked he. "Are ye commanded to watch the prison?" "Yes, noble Petronius." The prefect feared lest they might try to rescue the incendiaries. "Have ye the order to admit no one?" inquired Vinicius. "We have not. Acquaintances will visit the prisoners, and in that way we shall seize more Christians." "Then let me in," said Vinicius, and pressing Petronius's hand, he said, "Siact, I will come to learn her answer." "Come," responded Petronius. At that moment under the ground, and beyond the thick walls was heard singing. The hymn, at first low and muffled, rose more and more. The voices of men, women, and children were mingled in one harmonious chorus. The whole prison began to sound, in the calmness of dawn, like a harp. But those were not voices of sorrow or despair. On the contrary, gladness and triumph were heard in them. The soldiers looked at one another with amazement. The first golden and rosy gleams of the morning appeared in the sky. One, the lowest part of the prison, lying entirely underground, with a single opening in the ceiling. Jugurtha died there of hunger. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.